Monster Man, Episode 234, Ficamid and Planetar. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the P&Q chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Our first monster for today is the Ficamid. So the Ficamid's basically a sort of colony organism of fungus. It's got a big central core made up of kind of decomposing matter that's got all kind of fungal growths growing out of it, and what it can do is it can shoot out blobs of that matter, and then if they hit a target, they sort of grow into them, and gradually fungi begin to sprout from the target's body, and then ultimately they'll turn into a ficamid. The horror of fungus seems to be a common theme in this book. Maybe a common theme is overstating it, but there is at least one other monster that basically does this. That's the thing that turns you into the Vegapygmy, which is a type of mold, but I forget the specific color. And I understand that, you know, there's something in that time in school biology when you discover the extent to which you are colonized by other organisms. You know, if you've ever had something as simple as athlete's foot, or if you've had a plantar wart, or even when you think about your own gut flora, like that there are just all these other organisms that could be living on or in you, or that are living on or in you, it sort of does something for your sense of bodily autonomy that's quite frightening, I think. Or at least that can be frightening. It's a concept that you can spin into horror. So the Ficamid takes some of that and turns it into this kind of weird body horror. The idea of a character looking terrified at, you know, a fungus growing out of their arm is a pretty horrifying one. I would not like to have that happen to me. It's also quite dangerous. You need to have cure disease cast on you to end it. I feel like the prevalence of these kinds of monsters does do something, you know, for a while, and I don't know if this was true in first, but in later editions of D&D, clerics were really quite powerful. They provided a good balance of spellcasting and combat possibilities, and for all that they're meant to be kind of healers and protective magic users, they have an excellent suite of combat spells if they want it. So I feel like the prevalence of creatures like this sort of force clerics to make that choice to keep things like, you know, cure disease or remove curse or whatever, you know, keep them ready to go, and maybe cuts down on their offensive potential slightly, which is maybe not a bad thing. Now there is a risk, which is that if people begin to prep that kind of stuff regularly, then you need to make sure that it gets used, because there's nothing more boring than having the characters invest a bunch in life rafts and then nothing ever happens to the boat. So choosing creatures that have a disease or a, you know, a whatever, one of those condition spells that can harm you in a way other than just doing damage, I think lets the people who are good at dealing with that kind of thing do their thing in a way that's very rewarding. There's a T.E.D. Klein short story called Black Man with a Horn, and there's a throwaway reference in it where someone says, like, a spell was cast on a person and they grew something into him. And that image, when the first time I read it when I was, I don't know, 14 or 15, that really creeped me out. The idea of someone intentionally cultivating something like the Ficamid. You know, well, I need to make some more Ficamids. This is how they reproduce. So I will infect these kobolds, or I'll attack this halfling village and take them all away to my moldy fungus underground lair to be infected and turned into Ficamids. That's a pretty horrible thought. Could work quite well, I think. Next up, we have the Planetar. The Planetar? I mean, the of a planet, right? Like solar planetar. But it just sounds bad either way I say it. I said it last episode, I said planetar, which sounds like something that is more planet than something else. But planetar sounds silly as well, like Thanatar. It just sounds daft. And from a bad name, we go to a creature that I understand why it has to exist, but that is hard to see how it produces a satisfying experience in your game. You remember when we talked about the Deva? The Deva is basically an angel. Well, the Planeter is basically an even bigger angel. So if you're a lesser deity, then a Planeter might be your kind of right hand and chief minister. If you're a greater deity, you might be able to summon legions of Planeters to fight for you as though you weren't tough enough already. I feel like I have talked more about the challenges of pro-PC super powerful beings in Monster Manual 2 than in any of the other books that we've looked at, even though there were some in there. Like, obviously there were good creatures in Monster Manual and Fiendfolio, but Monster Manual 2 seems to be the one. The good news, I think, is that as you kind of go up the angelic hierarchy to this very powerful greater angel, it's not the biggest one, the solar, the sort of archangel, is going to come pretty shortly, but as you go up the angelic hierarchy to the Planetar, I feel like you get more and more into the realm where it's perfectly reasonable for this thing to have goals that are at cross purposes to yours. It's absolutely possible that you're hanging out in, the hive of scum and villainy, the Mos Eisley of your campaign, Baldur's Gate, or whatever, and some Planetars arrive and they're like, right, this place is a sink of iniquity, and we're going to devastate it. And you're like, well, look, I mean, I know these people are gamblers and thieves and cutthroats and scumbags, but they're not in the grand scheme of things, and the Planeters are, you know, warming up their flaming swords and being like, nope, sin. You can see that happening with these guys. You can equally see it turns out that the only person who knows where the Blue Jewel is Stabs McGee, the famous murderer. We need to get to her before the Planeters do, because they're not gonna care, right? You tell that Planeter, like, no, I know Stabs McGee is a bad lady, but we need to know where the Blue Jewel is. And the Planeter goes, I care nothing for your Blue Jewel, mortal. Like, you could have those sort of antagonistic moments. At the same time, this is a slight digression. In some games, people try to enforce certain behavioral norms by enforcing IC consequences, right? So instead of saying at the beginning of the campaign, hey, I don't want this to be a campaign where everybody's a murderer, they say, well, look, you can murder people if you want, but you're going to wind up getting arrested or whatever. Congratulations, you've just bought yourself a season ticket to Fighting the Cops, the role-playing game. If you don't want something to happen, just tell the players, hey, this is going to be a game about people who are on the moral level of, like, Han Solo, not the moral level of Jack the Ripper. Because the idea that, oh, hey, this is a free setting and everyone can do what they want, it's a laudable one, but what you ultimately wind up with is the tiresome repetition of the consequences. You know, the idea that, like, oh, well, if you blaspheme against the gods, then they're going to send a Planetar at you, is only fun if you actually want to play out a big fight against a Planetar, which I think most people don't. So some of these things are in there as kind of like beat sticks to keep unruly players in line, but as I always say, there's no such thing as an in-game solution to an out-of-game problem. And the out-of-game problem is that you and your player want two different things. That's not bad, necessarily, but the things you want may not be compatible. So, an ever-increasing level of, like, coercion monsters to put in the hands of the DM in order to avoid the cardinal sin of violating narrative causality? I hope that's not what we're seeing here. I feel more like what the Planetar and the Solar and all these guys are is someone went, well, look, there are huge sections dealing with demons and devils, but should there not be some corresponding angels? And someone went, yeah, but we're not going to do a whole section for them because typically the PCs would be less likely to fight them. And hey, presto. And I also don't want to write, deities and demigods full of very detailed minions for every different deity. So here's some generic angels. And that's fine. They work out okay. It is a little weird that very obviously kind of classical Judeo-Christian angels are fighting on behalf of, you know, Ogma or Shang-Di or whoever. But, you know, close enough. The Planetar, in terms of its abilities, in terms of its description, is not by any means a bad example of the thing that it is. But I feel like there are almost no circumstances under which having the thing that it is in your campaign adds to that campaign in a way that's fun. I could be wrong. Maybe if you're jaunting around the higher planes, you're just going to run into a bunch of Planetars, and that makes perfect sense. You know, maybe there is a heaven heist scenario that could be a lot of fun, where you have to actually, like, go into heaven, and, well, the great sage who died and went to Elysium, he's the only one who knows the location of the Blue Jewel, so we gotta get in there even though we're not authorized. I think I suggested something like that in the episode about Bahamut. So, there are things to do with them, but I think that, as I always say, I feel like the devils and demons provide a little more obvious motivation for people to be at odds with them. So the Planetar is fine, just stipulating all the usual restrictions about superpowered good guys. In fact, I think you're probably more likely to get good mileage out of these angel types just by playing them as stuffy, upright, by-the-book jerks who basically good but somewhat wily PCs have to finagle their way around. All right, that's about all the time that we have for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the P and Q chapter of Monster Manual 2, and also be on the lookout for yet more installments in the Monster Man Holiday Boss Rush. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.